And now joining us once again on the phone from Westchester, New York, we have Steve Kane, yoga instructor. And this time Steve is here to talk with us about the psychology and physiology of yoga. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, Mary. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, so good to have you back. So how are things there in Westchester? We're having a big storm here.
Yeah, it's not too bad. A little bit of a overcast drizzle kind of thing going on.
Okay. Well, if we get cut off at all, you know that it's because of the thunderstorm.
Okay, no worries. Forewarned.
So for people who haven't heard you on this program before and haven't gone... Can you give our listeners a little bit of information about your background?
Sure. I'm a father of a soon-to-be 19-year-old daughter and a 22-year-old son. I run a creative agency that does work in medical education and web technology. And then I also teach yoga at a studio in Tarrytown called Yoga Shivaya. And in addition to just teaching, you know, weekly class, I have a workshop on using yoga to cultivate happiness in our everyday lives that our talks together have been kind of an offshoot of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the last time you were on, you talked about yoga being the source of bliss, and that seemed to be related a lot with being able to quiet our minds.
Right, yeah, that was a great program. I do think that you know, the source of bliss is within, so we really explored that kind of in detail last time. But this idea of yoga being about quieting the mind goes all the way back to Patanjali, who wrote the Yoga Sutras, which is one of the masterworks of yoga. It was written about 2,500 years ago. And, you know, I remember the first time I saw this, the first four lines have a lot of impact. It starts with, "Now the teachings of yoga. Yoga is to still the patterning of consciousness. Then pure awareness can abide in its very nature. Otherwise, awareness takes itself to be the patterns of consciousness." So what this is saying essentially is you are not your thoughts. You know, and I was really kind of blown away by this idea. That was the first time I was ever kind of confronted with it, like, head on like that. And, you know, so if you know, kind of accept that, you know, if that's one of the reasons why we do yoga, you know, then it speaks to this idea that yoga is a way of gaining control of your state of consciousness. You can start to disconnect from the constant chatter of your mind and instead reconnect with this deeper, more blissful state of consciousness that we all carry within. And over time, as you build this awareness in your practice, you become less and less ruled by your thoughts, and that more blissful state just becomes kind of like your regular way of being.
Nice. That's a nice...
Right. Sounds good, right?
And I like that, you know, that what you just said about we are not our thoughts, because I talk about that a lot with my clients, that, you know, we are not our thoughts. And some people are shocked when I say that, you know,
right,
that our thoughts are not necessarily the truth or real.
Right, because it can really rule you. You know, if we all have had that experience of just your thoughts kind of running away with you, or, you know, getting in a cycle of thought that you just, you know, you're kind of a dog chasing your own tail and you just can't escape it. And it can be really frustrating, and, you know, can obviously, from, you know, your psychology practice, it can be, you know, a source of neuroses. So, you know, yoga's prescription is instead to try to help build this mind-body connection. And, you know, as you start to do your physical practice, you can kind of get a leverage point on your consciousness. You know, you can start to ask yourself questions like, can I find more of a sense of ease in this pose, or can I hold this pose for just one more breath without efforting? Can I surrender and relax a little bit more deeply into sensation, or can I quiet my mind and just be? And, you know, ultimately it kind of leads you to this, you know, can I stop striving and let the universe guide me? And it's just a different way of being, you know, not to say that you should, you know, you shouldn't always be in this state of being, but it's a relief from that, you know, chatter, that can really drag you down. And, you know, this process is called pratyahara, withdrawal of the senses, which is basically turning your awareness from the outside world to the inside world, which is this creates a gateway to connecting on a deeper level with the self. So, you know, again, kind of instead of being ruled by your thoughts, you instead connect to what does my breath feel like? What does my body feel like? You know, mm-hmm. what is it like just to be in this moment? And, you know, then this other state of awareness kind of blossoms out of that.
Right, right. And last time you talked about how this was a way of cultivating bliss.
Yeah, exactly. They say that your level of serenity is inversely proportional to your level of expectation. So, you know, this is a practice of cultivating serenity, you know, just letting go of, you know, thoughts of the past or the future, you know, plans or goals, and, you know, just practicing being. And so one of the things that I've become interested in, so like, you know, I've experienced this other state of consciousness in my practice, but, you know, as I'm reading the paper, I've just kind of been following how modern research is proving how closely tied this mind-body connection is, and that there are all kinds of interesting and unexpected benefits of these mindfulness practices. So, for instance, there's research that shows that complaining all the time actually rewires your brain to be more efficiently unhappy. So realizing that there's something that you'd like to do, your brain just tries to make those connections. So, you know, like if every time somebody cuts you off on the highway, you get bent out of shape, you know, keep doing that, you know.
Uh-huh.
So like over time, what your brain has done now is it's basically hardwired, you know, that knee-jerk, frustrated reaction when something like that is going on, you know, because it's trying to be more efficient, you know, but in this case it's, you know, creating efficiency around an unhappy event.
Right. Right.
So, you know, there's also research showing that if you feel more balanced physically, so like you actually have better balance physically, you also feel more balanced in your interpersonal relationships. Right. Isn't that, I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah. So you mean like doing something like tree pose? Wow.
Right. So if you feel more stable, you feel more physically stable, then you also feel more stable in interpersonal relationships. You feel less easily thrown off balance by whatever is going on. And I think that, you know, I think some of this goes all the way back to this idea that there's, you know, I think it was Aristotle, forgive me if I'm wrong, was, you know, this kind of mind-body separation. But the mind-body is really well integrated. So, you know, and there's also this idea of resilience, which I think we talked about before, that, you know, the more quickly that you can reconnect to your body and your breath during moments of stress, the more quickly you can recover from stress. And
right.
So, you know, and that idea, the idea, you know, your ability to recover quickly from stress is this concept of resilience. So elite athletes use this, you know, that even if they have just a few seconds between, you know, whatever they're doing, they can, you know, kind of gather themselves quickly in order to get back in the game. You know, but even just a few minutes a day of conscious breathing can help the rest of us build resilience. So, you know, another example of, you know, kind of how connection, awareness of your body and your breath can help you kind of master your state of consciousness. So, you know, just practice a little bit of conscious breathing and then, you know, you'll be a little bit less stressed out.
Right, right. And that all, I think, all makes sense on a very, you know, I'm trying to find the word. Like, I think we can all feel like that makes sense, right? Like, that it's practical. If you can breathe and calm down, then you can be resilient to the things going on around you.
Right, yeah, but I mean, that's, kind of, that's a little bit more kind of common sense. But some of the,
right,
you know, some of these other ones are,
yeah, but
you know,
some of the other ones are not, right? Like,
yeah, not as
to,
obvious, right.
Yeah.
I think it's just a reminder that we're an integrated system, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And to that, to the extent that we are an integrated system, you know, having, you know, if you can't master your thoughts by mastering either your breath or, you know, returning to the awareness of the sensations of your body, you can get a leverage point on your thoughts. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
you can work one of the other systems in order to, you know, kind of keep your thoughts from spinning out of control. Or,
right.
you know, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, just enjoy life more by being more present, you know, feeling more
mm-hmm.
blissful in each moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people who really master this, there's research that shows where monks have been able to achieve an alpha state where their bodies are generating these neurocorticoids, which have healing effects, and that other monks can have practiced a loving kindness meditation that when they, you know, scan their brains, they get the same kind of response as somebody who feels really well loved. So just by, you know, meditating on loving kindness,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're, you know, developing a you know, feeling of, you know, just being completely blissed out.
Right. So can this also, just by, you know, doing this, just by practicing yoga or meditation, can that give us a sense of well-being throughout our day?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think it becomes the new normal. You know, I think
mm-hmm.
I think that you, you know, I think it was one of the things that drew me back to yoga originally was this feeling of bliss, and then I started to realize I could start to thread that feeling of bliss into the rest of my life. You know, I'm not, you know, at the point where that's always normal, that I never get frustrated or that I'm never, like, kind of knocked off kilter. But more and more, you know, I'm just content to be. And I think it's a practice. I think that, you know, in many ways for me, that's really what yoga is about. You know, the word yoga is sometimes translated as yoke, meaning yoking your mind to your body and your breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or to put that more colloquially, that purpose of yoga isn't for getting a tight ass, it's for getting your head out of your ass.
Okay. I like that.
I like that too. So, you know, I think when one of these talks, we also talked about this idea of, about how life happens now, but our minds are constantly pulling us away from this present moment. And Lao Tzu said that when you live in your past, you have depression, but when you live in the future, you have anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the idea of yoking your mind to your body and your breath is to do neither, to be present, because you're the sensations of your body and the sensations of your breath are happening now. So they ground you in this moment and tether your mind to this moment, where your
mm-hmm.
mind is always wanting to race away. So there's a Buddhist teaching that speaks to this, which is yesterday is a memory, tomorrow is the unknown, now is the knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So this idea
right.
that, you know, life is happening now. This moment is the moment that's worthy of your attention.
Right. Right.
So, you know, going
yeah.
back to the research part of it, there's some other really interesting research which has proved that the memory of the thing is just the last time you remembered it, not the original event.
Wow.
Right, which is really trippy.
Mm-hmm.
So each time you remember something, you're actually altering the kind of the narrative. So you know, your memories themselves are just artifacts of your mind. They're not, you know, they're not true recollections of the original event. And you're thinking about it, you know, so your opinions about, you know, what an event might mean actually alter the memory so that, you know, maybe over time you've shaped, you know, what might have been a positive memory into a negative one or vice versa.
Right. And I believe you because that was something somewhat related to what my doctoral dissertation was about.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, how we are easily suggestible.
Hmm.
Our memories are easily changed by whether it's our emotion or something that somebody else suggests to us.
Right, well, very cool. Yeah, so you know it from that angle as well. So,
yes.
Right, so, you know, so what does that really mean is, you know, in many ways reality is what you believe it to be. And there's research that shows that, you know, 40% of your sense of well-being is not situational. It's really your mental attitude about your, that situation that's, you know, affecting your sense of well-being. So, you know, choosing to see your life as a glass that's half full or half empty will obviously affect, you know, how you feel about life.
Right.
You know,
right.
Or, you know, people talk about practicing gratitude. You know, there's in all sorts of research, I'm sure you've seen that, about how mindfulness practices can increase happiness and how happiness can increase longevity. You know, so that, you know, that just your thinking about your situation or your optimism, you know, as well as the physical practices themselves, how, you know, strengthening practices can increase longevity. You know, it's all things that kind of move you towards this sense of being, you know, a more fully embodied whole, you know, that you're, you know, we spoke about purpose as well, but, you know, they're all kind of interconnected. You know, that sense of well-being is just being supported on all fronts with the physical practice, with, you know, the practice of being present, the practices of, you know, being more mindful about your thinking and you know, it all connects into this, you know, a sense of well-being.
So I have a question about that. So doing the practice of actually going into the different postures,
right?
Does it bring us to the present moment more easily?
Yeah, that's why, you know, there's this, the physical practice and also the, you know, pranayama, the breathing practices, are ways of grounding us. But there's also just kind of working the kinks out, you know. I mean, the way yoga was originally designed was really just to get the body ready for meditation so that you could sit quietly and quiet the mind. You know, we've really focused on the physical practice in the way yoga is taught in the United States, but there are entire yoga practices that, you know, don't even involve, you know, asana or the physical practice. You know, where you sit and meditate, or, you know, like I was talking about the monks meditating on loving kindness or, you know, practicing good works and stuff. But, you know, I think that, you know, one of the reasons why this is so effective is that, you know, it's not really the way we're designed as a species, you know, to just sit in a resting state of bliss. And it goes back, for me, it goes back to Freud. You can correct me if, I'm misquoting Freud here, but this,
okay.
you know, the idea that, the desire of the id and the demands of the ego, you know, are kind of working against each other, and that the superego needs to constantly resolve these often unconscious inner conflicts. You know, you want another piece of chocolate cake, but you're worried about getting fat or what somebody will think of you, and that these conflicts are constantly beneath the surface of our awareness, creating a lot of unnoticed stress.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Going back to the yoga practice, you know, you're kind of doing the opposite. You're saying, you know, I'm just going to be here in this moment with my body and with my breath, and you're going to kind of reconnect your psyche, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for most of us, you know, what we're doing is we're going through our days, we're stressed out, you know, maybe we're behind schedule, work is challenging, our home lives are challenging. These subconscious conflicts are happening beneath the waterline. A lot of times we don't have the time to pay attention to them. And then at the end of the day, after being surrounded by all the stress, you're trying to relax on the weekend and, you know, your boss calls you and you feel like you're being attacked. You know, so your body
mm-hmm.
basically has a fight or flight response because, you know, your body doesn't know that this isn't an actual assault. You know, you just feel threatened by that phone call, you know, before you even pick it up. All of this stress can lead to a host of health problems, and we're on
mm-hmm.
edge because our bodies react to all the stimuli, even though most of it isn't even a real threat. And then at the end of the day, we're exhausted, just from all of this stimulation.
Right.
You know, instead of learning how to relax and unwind, you know, and heal, for a lot of us, what we do is we turn to more stimulation in order to de-stress. So, you know, at the end of the day, what are we doing? We're texting, we're watching TV or playing video games or overeating or drinking or, you know, drug use, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to get out of our own heads for a while. But, you know, ultimately that's not really helping. You know, really what helps more is to learn just to de-stress, you know, to return to this present moment and quiet.
Right. Right. So yoga helped you with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it brings us back to that "you are not your mind" quote from Patanjali.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of adding more stimulus to occupy an already overburdened psyche, you know, you look to quiet your mind and build this awareness of just being content in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like yoga is really about integrating the mind, the body, and the breath in this moment.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, there's research that's shown that the vagus nerve, which is a giant nerve cluster that connects the body to the gut,
mm-hmm.
Has 80% of the fibers in that are efferent, which means that they move from the gut to the brain rather than vice versa. So, you know, basically what that means is as all of these stresses are hitting your system, the source of a lot of that information is actually happening in your gut. So, you know, you're reacting physically to life stress. And, you know, it goes back to your question about how does movement help, because the physical body is the one that's kind of taking the hit, undoing a lot of that stress needs to happen physically, you know, that you can only address so much of it, by talk therapy or whatever.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's an argument for movement being important in order just to, you know, again, you know, work the kinks out and de-stress. And there's actually, you know, chemical components to that stress that get built up and can be released through movement.
Right.
And then, you know, there's, you know, so we're talking basically about the sympathetic nervous system, which is your body's fight or flight response to stress. And then, you know, yoga engages the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your bliss state, this kind of resting state of calm underneath all the you know, overstimulation, you know. And, you know, not only can yoga help you reduce stress, but it also can reconnect you to this resting state of well-being, you know, this recognition that this moment is perfect just the way it is.
So, you know, and I like that, and I talk about that a lot, and that, you know, that deep down at the center of us is that feeling of peacefulness and bliss. It's just kind of covered over by all the stress.
Exactly, yeah.
So this is a way of reconnecting to that, getting through the all that stuff on top.
Right. Yeah, it's a remembering, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I think that was one of the things we talked about last time, was this idea of just like, you know, remember that perfect day when you're a child, when you're just happy to be alive? You know, like that's still in there. You know, that sense of just joy and wonder, you know, we all carry that with us. We've just forgotten how to reconnect with it because we've just, you know, taken on, you know, greater and greater burdens of responsibility and stress.
Right, right. So in the few minutes that we have left, do you have any final thoughts for listeners?
Yeah, sure. I think that this is you know, something that you can practice every day. It doesn't take that long. You know, when you're feeling stressed, just take a few moments to check in. You know, close your eyes, reconnect with your body, and try to take 3 long, slow, conscious breaths. And, you know, that sense of well-being can start to feel like your new normal. You know, the more you check in, you can start to feel, you know, whole again. And, you know, I'd say that, you know, you also, I think it makes sense to, you know, move towards those moments where you can find quiet, you know, rather than, you know, looking for more stimulation to, you know, to de-stress like we spoke about earlier. You know,
right.
Maybe you like to garden or, you know, just sit out on your porch and look at the sunset or, you know, whatever it is, find a few moments of quiet. And that can really help a lot.
So if people are interested in taking your yoga class, if they're up in Westchester area, or if they want to find out about your Art of Happiness workshop, how can they do that?
Sure. I teach at Yoga Shivaya in Tarrytown, which is yogashivaya.com, yogashivaya. And you can reach out to me at kanestebe@me.com, kanestebe@me.com, you know, regarding my class or, you know, wanting to do the workshop. And, yeah, I think it's, I think these, you know, small practices start to move you towards, you know, this sense of, you know, feeling less stressed and more of a feeling of well-being and, you know, learning to quiet your mind and kind of getting some leverage on that. And it can be really powerful. It can really be, you know, life-changing in aggregate. It really starts to add up.
And we all need that these days.
Absolutely. Don't get me started.
Yeah. So just doing it every day, like you said, it adds up. Even if at the beginning you don't feel it, right?
Yeah, I think maybe at first it might not be obvious that it's having an effect, but I think that this process of just checking in, you can also just start to realize the things that are really toxic, like the kinds of stress that you just don't really want in your life. You know, if you're just willing to kind of listen inward a little bit more, and then you start moving towards the things that, you know, give you more joy and you feel more at ease with, and you start to move away from the things that, you know, don't do those things for you, or, you know, or creating, you know, are creating toxic levels of stress.
You make different decisions. I
Yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much again, Steve, for coming on the program.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes, it always is, so you'll have to come back again.
All right, well, and good luck with your book tour.
All right, sounds great.